All right, so we'll call the meeting to order. This is the September meeting of the Parks Advisory Board, and we'll start with the public comment.
We have two supers and one listener. Is that what we have?
Yeah. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, we just called
it. Ready to get started?
He just called it to order and is doing public speaking now.
Just reminded you of 3 minutes.
Okay.
Speak up if you need to readjust.
Do we have any updates on Daybreak?
No, but I can talk about that a little bit before.
Just 3 minutes. Be respectful of his, and be respectful of people's time, so everybody's time here. So, the first one that requested to speak was Linda. You want to? You can stand right there. Whatever you're comfortable doing.
Well, I'd like to be able to see people's faces.
Okay.
How about here? Perfect. So I own property on the East Fork of the Lewis River and found out about this clear cut that's being planned for right on the Moulton Falls Trail. Really disturbing to me just because it is such a beautiful place. This is a gorgeous trail that it's only 4 miles, very flat, ADA accessible, great for older people, old dogs, and it's a destination hike. You get to a very beautiful place, Moulton Falls. I think you guys probably, hopefully, have hiked this area. So we have been working with DNR trying to save this little parcel. This is something that's going to reflect on Clark County, even though it is not Clark County land, just because it's on a Clark County trail. They have agreed to a 200-foot buffer. And I just wanted to say to you guys that if you've ever hiked this trail, you realize how steep it is. We had a scientific report written by Dick Durland of Friends of the East Fork of the Lewis River, and he did a soil, high erosion soil samples. He did the steepness of the slopes, and this paper came to conclusion that it's a high landslide area. So even though we're gonna have this buffer, you're gonna be able to see it. It doesn't take care of the view shed problem, which is an aspect that DNR looks at. We're also really worried about landslide potential. We're kind of distraught that they're not thinking about that, but we do have them walking the trail with us in October, and I will be testifying in front of DNR board first week in October also. We would love to see this whole parcel saved. You know, people go to the woods to hike, to see beauty, and we would be really sad to see this clear cut happen. We are really worried about the East Fork of the Lewis River. It is a native salmon habitat rehabilitation stream and is right next to it. We also have the Chehachley Prairie tourist train that goes right through there. They're going to have high view of it. It's also supposed to be a scenic byway, so people can take that road that follows the river, gorgeous, but they're also going to be seeing this clear cut. So we're not really protecting this view shed very well. You probably know about Bell's Mountain Trail, which takes off from the Moulton Falls Trail, 14-mile trail, but it goes through clear cuts, one after the other. And every person I have ever talked to said, gosh, it would be so nice to be able just to walk on a trail and not have to see all these clear cuts. DNR doesn't really look at things that way. What I want to push out there the most is the landslide potential. We have high erosion soils and we have very, very steep slopes. We don't want to have another Oso Washington happen. We don't want to just stand by and just let this happen. So I would like to see the Parks Advisory Board just, you know, take it on a little bit more research. If you have any questions, if you want to talk to Dick Durland, who wrote the scientific paper, it's 27 pages. Very simple to understand, wonderful piece of work. You know, he can explain it to you if you have any questions. I would really, really hate to see the blame land on you guys when this happens, because a lot of people are going to be upset. You know, I see all this funding for new trails. Let's keep our existing trails, you know, worth the hike.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Can I interject with
you? Oh, sure.
So
first, can you confirm, is it a clear cut or is it a...
It's called a variable retention harvest, and so they leave about 8 trees per acre.
Okay, so it's pretty darn close to a clear cut at that point. Okay. And that was my first thing. I'll be honest, I did not read your documents. I skimmed them. And I contacted Bill, and I had misunderstood what your response was. I was thinking, oh, it's not a clear cut, it's more of a thinning. So that was my first question, which, you know, definitely makes me more concerned. The second thing is, though, from what Bill had told me, the state did a study on the landslide potential. Do I remember that right? Or just that they had, remind me how that came
out. I think I know the study that Dick Dierman conducted, and in fact, it's actually been in the audience here a few times at our parks.
Oh, yeah, he's very active.
For other purposes, but anyway, so we've seen that study. I don't think that DNR has actually done their own study.
They haven't done their, okay. So just a general review, or how does it work on their end as far as
on their end, and that's where Kevin would have to come in and find out exactly what components they put into preparing for a very retention harvest. And I do know that they go back and replant after they get done harvesting, but I don't know if they've actually done any geological studies in preparation.
All right, so
they may or may not actually do those. So.
All right, so then definitely thank you for coming in, because I got misinformed through the process. So
can we suggest that they do a study?
We can ask and see what their protocol is.
That might be a good start. So, to show that someone is interested in looking.
Right, right. Yes, we can ask the question for sure.
Yeah.
So.
On that note, we have this full packet available for you to review. It was sent to you by email, but the study was included in the packet from our county forester for the topic group we have later, talking about the trust land transfer. So he did include it in there for information, but I don't know how far that goes. So it is included in the request.
Okay. Or would it be better instead of to ask the state whether they've done a study, but just ask the state to respond to this study and see what the response is?
I know the state is in possession of the study that Dick Dierman has done.
They are, and they keep overlooking it. They did do a precursory study on the landslide potential, but like I said, I don't think it was very in-depth. I mean, we have done field reconnaissance, we have done pictures, we have taken, all you can see in the study, all the work he has done. And that's what we show, that the landslide potential is high. It's high erosion soils, very steep slopes.
I know that Hunter Decker, our defending forester, actually went out there and flagged the buffer zone, the 200, I think it's 250 feet now is what we're talking about.
Oh, I thought it was 200, okay.
For the trust fund transfer, I'm showing 250.
Okay.
But so he's got, so you can actually, when you walk the trail, you can actually visually see where that clear cut would start, or that harvest would start up the hill. And so I think he marked 63 or 64 flag locations along there. So as you're walking, you can actually see the impacts up above that flag. So
Bill, will you initiate, or do you need a supporting motion? I would request that they respond to the study.
We could do that, yeah. That would be a good idea.
Because that's a good idea, John.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
I think better than asking them would they do one.
We can ask them,
We can't tell them, but we can ask.
Correct. We can ask, and it's up to them to make that decision.
Yeah.
Obviously, they take our interest at heart, as well as individuals at heart. And so we can always ask the question and see if they'll comply.
Has DNR already issued their SEPA?
No.
They haven't yet?
No.
As far as, and we can get this a little later on, as far as I know, they've postponed the harvest until a later time, until all this is worked out. So
May of 2019. It was January. It is now going to be May, and usually SEPA comes out 30 days. We have 15 days for response for SEPA, which is not enough time to get enough people involved. So I'm trying to be proactive.
So the ecology hasn't looked at this yet either, then?
Not that I
know. Kelly, I know you're a trail guide. Do you have anything?
Not really.
Okay.
So do we want to make a motion then,
yeah,
John?
I'll move to direct staff to, or pass around, to request a response from the state to the study?
I'll second that.
All right, so the motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. Motion moves forward.
What's being passed around the room is the email and the documentation that came from Linda and the friends of
East Fork of the Lewis River.
I knew you'd have
that. That's where Dick Ewing comes into play.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. And how many are in your group?
Well, you know, we have Sierra Club involved. There's quite a few people involved there, East Fork of the Lewis River. It's hundreds of concerned citizens, neighbors. I'm going to be doing a letter writing campaign because I think a lot of people don't even know that it's going to happen. And so I want to get the word out. And I think we're going to have many more people that are upset about it. It's just such a gorgeous place.
I've gotten a few emails in support of pulling off the harvest, if you will. And so overwhelmingly over the other side where it isn't let it happen because the money goes towards supporting schools. But that was just one single email. Mm-hmm. So, but Moat Falls is an absolutely beautiful trail.
I agree.
So I've been walking that trail for many years myself. So
love to save it. Great.
All right. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. All right. So our next speaker, Kathy.
Right. You want to speak or just check in? Or
I think we both agree on the same thing, and that was the access to the gateway. Last time we were here, they said they had parking, and we could park in the boat parking lot, but then when I was over there, I realized you have that pole set in concrete so that a horse trailer, a gooseneck with a two or three horse trailer and like hers that has living quarters, you can't get in. So.
Oh, you're talking about the entrance?
Yeah.
Right there at the entrance, the bower? Really?
So, I mean, a two-horse bumper pole can probably squeeze in there, but if you have a gooseneck, you can't get in.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, that's where our entrance gate is at.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
On the west side of the road, where the trailer, the boat parking
is. Where the boat side is at. Huh, okay. Yeah, because we've had the trucks come in there before. I thought it was far enough off the road to where you could straighten out before you come through there.
Yeah, and I was just curious. I showed up today because Anita Wells usually runs trail plan. She's not here, so I don't. Maybe it wasn't a good time for us to come.
Oh no, it's fine.
No.
So the one thing that was requested last time was that we change out our park rule signs because most of our park rule signs say no horseback riding. So those signs are actually being manufactured and changed out right now as we speak. So
now we can just get it.
So that will eliminate equestrian use. So it's pretty common. Most of our sites, of course, don't allow equestrians, but some do. And so we ran out of the ones that don't have that rule on there. And so we're having some new ones made up. So if it hasn't already been changed out, it will very soon. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
And who is the right person to request, I guess? For
all things request? Well, Doug Keller's my parks maintenance superintendent. He's a good one, and he oversees all of our parks maintenance crew chiefs. And so Scott Long is our North Parks maintenance crew chief. He works out of Louisville Park, and he's the one that manages that site.
So
he'll be the one that's actually changing the sign out. So we'll have to take a look at.
But he could also fix the driveway.
Well, we'll have to take a look at that because that is a major infrastructure change because that's been there for many, many years. And so that pole is set to concrete. And that also coincides with the big opening gate. And so I know it's off there a little ways off the road.
Well, it only takes up half the road because the other half has those tire thingies that puncture tires.
Yeah.
So it's not a wide, you know, like most of the gates will go across two lanes or a really wide.
It should be a 12-foot wide open. So
pulling in there with a long gooseneck.
Are you coming south or north? I think that's
either way,
south, right?
Okay. Either way.
Anyway.
I guess we'll have to look at the radius on that and see if we have to widen that somehow. But we'll have to figure that out because that'll require a gate change as well.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
Okay, thank you.
It's about $8,000 change out. Okay.
All right, and then Mulata, you have
Yes, I would like to invite all of you to the parks. They recognize at the Light of Neighborhood Association Awards. And I'm going to send a flyer around. If it could end up by bills, that'll be perfect. But it's been a great partnership as far as we're concerned for the community and the parks and the county and the whole community benefits. And we're trying to sort of recognize that.
You find a place?
October 3rd. And I'm going to let you the flyer go by.
Okay. There's nobody else on the list, so we'll move forward. And I guess we'll start with our roll call and guest introductions, if there are any. Bill, we'll let you start.
Sure. Bill Griffey, Parks Manager, present.
Laura, I need to change this. Laura Hoge, I'm now taking on my married name, and I'm with Parks Administration.
John Spencer, protector of all things good, and eminence grand poobah of my little world.
Jesus.
Chris May. No, every public schools. I'm not even going to try.
Barbara Anderson, Parks Advisory.
Kelly.
Kelly Petty, Parks Advisor.
Right. Jay Chester, Parks Advisory.
Dave Weston, Parks Advisory Board.
Jennifer Halleck, Vancouver Public Schools, for the liaison on the Parks Board.
Jeremy Canoe, Clerk of the Staff.
All right. So we'll go forward. Adoption of the August 10th meeting minutes. Any comments?
I actually read them.
Mr. Spencer gets a gold star
for the week.
Move to adopt as written.
Second. All right. Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. Motion passes. And again, I am remiss. I meant to do this last night, do my volunteer hours, but I know. I'm not a very good leader. We need to make sure that we do that, and I will get mine in as soon as I can. So we'll move on to unfinished business. Bill, the PIF balance update.
Okay, thank you. Well, John, quickly, before I forget, do you want to give like a little talk about your play structure?
Yes.
And how that
yes.
Meeting went? Maybe around the room?
Yeah, I'll make a note.
So PIF balances, again, for August 31st. And so money's still coming in. And you'll see a pretty major expenditure down in the PIF 5 combination at the bottom there, $522,000. That was for the construction of Otto Brown Park, so another construction installment, if you will. I think that's going to pretty well wrap up most of the expenses coming from that park, from my understanding. And then, so I'll be talking about this in the manager's report. So the balance that you see in the PIF combo, as well as in the acquisition, that's going to go towards the Anderson purchase, or a good portion of that. And so I'll talk about that a little later on. As far as the other districts, PIF 6, we have $98,000 that came in. PIF 7, $12,490. PIF 8, $134,621. PIF 9, $29,452. And PIF 10, $34,000. So monies are still coming in. I noticed that it's starting to slow down just a little bit. So probably the sales of homes are slowing up a little bit, so it's kind of an indicator. But nonetheless, we're still making strides forward, so I'm really appreciative of that. Any questions on this?
All right, so we'll move on to Lewis and Clark Trail update.
So,
Bill, again.
Been in touch with Dan Miller with the National Park Service, Laura Van Den Hoof, and so he has actually scheduled our next meeting. And so this is actually taking a hard look at sections 1 and 2, Vancouver Lake, basically up to the Richfield, the city of Richfield. We had some pushback from Fish and Wildlife as well as with the wildlife refuges as to where that alignment should be. With regard to the National Wildlife Refuge, that whole southern unit, the Carter unit, No, I'm sorry, the S River unit is basically car only. And so for us to push a multi-use trail in there is against their regulations, if you will. And so we're trying to work with them on trying to locate a multi-use trail on that site that is acceptable to both us and the National Wildlife Refuge. With regard to the Washington Fish and Wildlife, that whole area that is between Vancouver Lake and up to the Wildlife Refuge is hunted in the fall and winter time for bird hunting. And so our trail is kind of an imposition onto, you know, that recreational resource. And so we had a meeting talking about how we can basically cohabitate, you know, with the multi-use trail and all the other functions that are going on currently. And so that's what this meeting is about. This next one is to actually find the alignment for the trail that's going to work. I've got my biases in that we've got a, you know, 6 mile long WashDOT right-of-way that WashDOT is willing to give us. It's dead flat, you know, so it's really easily ADA accessible. So I hope that in the end that we choose that alignment, but it may end up that we have to go off that alignment and up on along the lakeshore, if you will. And so that is a little bit, it's going to be a little interesting if we have to go that way, so because it is steep and we've got some slide potential there. So. So we'll know more. I know an invitation went out to you folks with that, is that right?
Yeah, and yes. It's on your calendar as well.
It's on your calendar, okay. And so it'll be an interesting conversation. And so we really need to get that alignment nailed down so we get a map, and then we can move forward with the entire project. So I believe that Brianna Truden, she works with Dan. She's actually mapped out all the other sections so far. And so I think this is the last one that needs to be refined, if you will, so that we can then take it to the next step. So basically, after we get the plan in place, all the way from Steigerwald to Washougal, all the way up to the city of Richfield, then they're actually going to create a master plan document similar to that of what we've got with Salachie Prairie. And then from there, we can actually take it out and start doing our wide public outreach, really getting this trail on the map. And so with that, then we're going to start doing our fundraising. So that's what this whole next year is going to be dedicated to. We've got Dan Miller from the National Park Service on board with us until October of 2019, and we definitely want to fully use his services while we've got on this grant. So that's our plan. So October 4th will be an interesting meeting. I look forward to it, and hopefully we'll come up with a resolution that everybody is on board with. Okay.
You have the draft of the notes from the last meeting in May that will also be a part of this next meeting in your packet.
Yeah, Dan just got those out to us just recently. So, another thing to keep in mind is if we do use the alignment that does go through the Fish and Wildlife area, we're also looking at making it friendly for wildlife, as in like overpasses so that wildlife can run underneath the trail system. Is the one thing they are talking about is fencing it so that people and their dogs stay on the trail and not into the wildlife area. So we might do some elevation changes where we go up and over wildlife and run freely back and forth. You know, the bigger ones like the white-tailed deer. And as far as the fencing, you know, the smaller wildlife will be able to roam through because it'll just be like, you know, field fencing. So that's all going to be taken into consideration. So some wetlands might be in play. So we talk about elevated boardwalks as a possibility. So there's a lot of things that are still yet to iron out. We'll see where it goes.
Okay. Parks code review. I don't know that there's any update. Okay.
It's been busy with so much.
That's all right. So. And then we had a field trip last, 2 weeks ago?
Yes. Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we went to the Conservation Future sites, or a couple of them, and unfortunately I couldn't get you into Camp Perry because we didn't have the lock. We do now. So the folks at Camp Perry, as well as City Cameras, actually put a third lock on there so that we can now get in there. So if we go a field trip in the future, I'll take you up that roadway. That was basically improved as they put their sewer line in, and so you can actually see our future trail alignment, and I'll be talking about that today when we talk about the conversion that is happening because of that sewer line project.
So I'll talk about that property.
Okay. The community liaison update. We, you know, on the back of your agenda here is several items here, and then a, I guess that's a tour. So,
I see a September 21st field trip on here.
Yeah.
Are we going to do that?
You know, that's a good question. Good catch. Is anybody available to do that? Because, I mean, it's the first month back in school. Most everybody's back in school. I know there's 22 districts that aren't. Some people that can't quite make it in there. So yeah, and the weather's turning and stuff like that. So
if it's a hot spot you want to go for, I'm up for it, but it's up to you if there's enough interest.
What day do we want to
go? September 21st.
September 21st. It's a week from
today.
Next Friday.
Fridays are usually free, so.
Is there a place you want to go, or?
Maybe we should visit Moulton Falls.
Yeah, good.
I don't think Kelly will be back by then, will he?
But not much point.
Kelly, will you be back by next Friday?
I get back on Sunday.
Okay. This Sunday or the following?
No, the following Sunday.
Oh,
20.
So you would miss it.
So he'd miss it.
And I know I can't walk it, so.
I know I'm jammed up on Friday, so I can't make it, but. Hey, do you got any interest, or?
I'm new
dad and everything else, so I think we'll pass on this.
Well, at some point in the future, you guys want to get together and do something like that, let me know, and we'll be more than happy to
okay.
do that.
Okay, all right. So, we'll save it, but we'll pass on this month's opportunity. So, all right, and again, the community liaison update on the backside of your agenda, there's the events coming up. Everybody's got their name tag, I believe, now.
It's missing the all pad. They set a date. Did everybody get the reminder for that?
I did set that.
10/19.
I don't think I have a name tag.
Camas.
Yeah. Did I get a name tag and lose it already?
Was that the all parks you said?
All parks.
We ordered it just for the 7 members.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. You usually wear this full name tag. I'll get you one.
Are you that's feeling okay. loved?
Feeling the love.
We'll get you one.
We'll get you. Yeah, I was going to say, we can get you one. That was.
Did she include you in the notification, Laura? I'm trying to think if I added you or not. I think I did.
So tell me again, it's 10/19.
10/19. I'll forward you the email.
I got your email.
I don't.
Is that
it? It's like 4:30 to 6:30 or 5:30 to 7:30,
yeah.
Something like that.
I'll just
I think it was. I think it was. I think you're right. I think it starts at 4:30 because I know it's babysitting time for me. I was like, oh, they do it. I don't have to pay a sitter.
I will update the agenda.
Okay.
I'll send you the information.
In the after meeting.
Yeah.
So we'll get
she
the
just sent out a save the date.
Okay.
And we'll get specifics to us later. It'll be at the community center there at Lackamas Lake.
Yes, that's right.
This is a very nice facility.
It is.
She gives you the reminder.
All right. Next agenda item is dog paw. Seems to be a recurring event.
So I had a meeting. It was actually my first meeting with the dog paw board, the entire board. I was there. There was about 5 people all together. And with Mark Watson's last meeting, he basically resigned at that meeting, citing some health issues that would have to take him away on a more indefinite basis. And so we had a discussion about what we talked about in the past. You know, they came here, was it about 3 months ago, we gave a presentation and some options that they presented back to us, Paul Scarpelli and Mark Watson, and the possibility of introducing pay-as-you-go type of system, you know, to afford licensing, and which, you know, on its got its merits. However, at the time, I was really warmed up to the idea because I realized that, you know, it's hard to charge to get into a park that's traditionally been free, and it also has an impact on our recreational community if we do charge an entry fee, if you will. And so, since then, just going back in time a little bit here, a couple meetings. I had a meeting with Mike Reynolds, who is the community development director. He's new. And he came up with an idea, because he also oversees the animal control officers. And so trying to figure out how to get more animal control officers on board, because they're truly understaffed. And so he thought that the possibility of introducing a pay station at the entrances of our off-leash areas, just for the purpose of buying day licenses for those pet, for those folks who do not have licensed pets, they could buy a day license for $2 or $3 just to get into the off-leash for that area. That license would, or that, that slip that they would use, they could actually use that to go back and actually buy a full license, or if they bought 3 or 4 or 5 day passes, they could actually afford the actual annual license for their pets. And so that was the concept that they're throwing out there. And so for anybody who was licensed, they just type in the dog license number and they're in. So there's that component. And it also addresses, you know, folks that come over from Oregon and use, because there's a lot of folks that come from Oregon to use our off-leash areas. It would actually help generate some revenue in that regard for pet licenses. And, you know, thereafter the animal control officers to help enforce. Mitch did say that the enforcement will go in place or go into effect. So there will be animal control officers out there on site on a more regular basis now, coming and going at different times of day. They won't be out there 40 hours a week, because it's just, there's only 5 officers and they work 7 days a week and 2 shifts. So, but they will come out at different times during the weekdays as well as the weekends, and actually do serious enforcement. And so that, I think, in itself is going to get the word out as far as the lawlessness that's going on out there, as you will. And so Dogpile was pretty happy to hear about that with the board, but we're still really on the fence as to if we're going to allow pay stations, because in the end, it also does affect the First Amendment rights, you know, to limit people that come into parks that have traditionally been free. So it kind of violates the ability for people to gather, you know, free. So there's some stuff that really needs to be worked out still. So I'm kind of in limbo on this whole status, if you will. Another thing that I understand is I can't get a hold of Doc Paul anymore. So with Mark stepping down, he didn't forward us a contact person. And so there is another group that is actively engaged, who have been members of DocPoc, about 80 of them. And there's a person that kind of is overseeing that group who wanted to be the new president of DocPoc, but I don't know where that's at right now, quite frankly. I can't get a hold of anybody, there's nothing on their website that points me in any direction as to where they stand. I know that Mark contacted you last weekend and said that they're no longer going to be maintaining the site. Yeah. So I don't know what that means. I need to have something in writing. Not
a random.
No, we have an actual bona fide agreement with DocPod that as we've had for, you know, quite a few years now. And we've got nothing in writing to say that they're not going to maintain anymore. So we got that.
Well, and actually what he had said was they were going to send you a letter, so I think they are.
Okay.
So right. I think
I haven't seen anything today.
But yeah, it seems to be an interesting day. There seems to be Mark's opinion or thought process, and the board of DocPod is not totally in alignment. So it'd be interesting to see what this letter says.
Yeah.
And who signs it? If he's resigned as the president.
I feel like there's some internal turmoil going on that has to be worked
out. That's kind of the sense I get, too.
We don't have any connection with him right now, which is disturbing to me, because we really need that to happen. I'm not sure who's managing the offside area, or if we need to step in, like, right now and start managing those sites. I don't know. So we're just kind of monitoring the off-leash areas and seeing what's happening. But outside of getting a hold of somebody to find out where we stand.
Right.
You know, I've notified my maintenance staff to keep an eye on our office areas just to see what's happening out there. And if we need to start maintaining those sites, we will do that.
I will go ahead and send him a note and see if he responds. If I get something a little bit better for y'all.
That would be good. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not a loss on this one. This is interesting. You know, don't have anything to really say. It's weird. And with regard to the whole fee collection thing, that's kind of up in the air too. I mean, we have to really struggle through the legalities of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of legality. I just think the practicality of it too is.
Well,
is,
see, the thing is
have a kiosk.
If, yeah, if everybody said yeah, let's go do that. We just got done putting automated parking fee stations in four of our sites. Well, it was about $10,000 per site, you know, to do that. And some of our athletes areas have two entrances, so you double that at one site alone.
Double that, and how do you control the gate?
I mean, well, it's electronic. It'd be electronic magnetic gate. So once you punch in your code, the gate unlocks for.
So that $10,000 includes the gate and some type of entrance control.
Right. So, yeah.
But still, that's a lot of $2.
It's a big startup cost, if you will.
Startup cost.
But what was the percentage of unlicensed dogs in the county? It's ridiculous.
Super high. It is super high. It's, I think there's only like 70% of the dogs that are being licensed, the rest are not. And so, and you know, our animal control agency, they like to know the demographic of what the usage. They like to know about the owners and the dogs. If the dogs have been spayed, neutered, that kind of stuff. That all shows up on licensing. And there's a process that they go through to get their license, and so that's all I know, quite frankly.
And you're right about the Oregon. There's a lot of Oregon plates when I go down there.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, they might be licensed over in Oregon, but, you know.
Yeah, they're not.
You know, they're not here.
They're not licensed here as well.
Not licensed for here.
It's our impact.
But that one, if you say it, that day license would allow them access into all the off-lease areas for that entire day, so around Clark County.
Now, do you know, was it mentioned, if the Humane Society volunteer organization had stepped up yet?
Well, one of the members on Dog Pod is a...
Yeah, and she came up with the idea of their volunteers, that they have excess volunteers being the ride-alongs. And if that had been initiated, and if they'd looked at expanding that to other volunteers.
I think Mitch has talked about that, you know, having ride-alongs and people that helped out, so these officers are not necessarily
not alone.
By themselves.
Yes.
You know? So that's kind of a big deal, because all too often these officers are by themselves. And they have
because
angry,
they're so understaffed, yes.
Angry pet owners, then it's nice to have a second person there just to help, you know, so.
That sounds like a good volunteer opportunity.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people that love dogs.
And a name tag.
And a name tag.
Yeah. I know we have ride-alongs with our sheriff's office.
This is Clark County. If you get a look at them, they're all. Yeah.
Well, I've been kind of scanning, looking to see if anything came out about that, and I hadn't seen anything.
No, not so far. It's been really quiet, and so that's what concerns me. And so I'm not sure what's going on. Now, there's a group of advocates that really want to see the off-leash areas continue.
Sure.
And so they're going to be meeting down at the Fort Vancouver Regional Library tomorrow morning between 8 and 10 or 8:12.
So you have the dog licensing fee handout. Right. It's on the back of that at the bottom where it says dog park advocates. You have Dog Pop, and then underneath that you have Vancouver Dog Parks. And next to that is the information on that meeting.
So yeah, that's the group that's been basically with Dog Pop for many years, as far as members, if you will. And they are really anxious and willing to just jump in and take over if Dog Pop cannot. And so I asked her leader if she could provide us a written statement to let us know, so I can take it up to, you know, our county officials and give them a heads up as well. So I like it when I see a written letter coming up so that I've got something to share. And that's going to take some steps.
It's kind of like putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see where this goes. I hope I'll have something more by next month to share with you. Hopefully there will be some major changes that have been made.
Well, if nothing else, thank you for continued efforts along those lines.
Yeah, It's you know, definitely it's been a problem for a long time. And my heart goes out to those folks, because they've been dealing with a lot of issues in these off-leash areas. They've been fairly dangerous, you know, with unaltered pets, and just the dog off-leash areas not being used as off-leash areas, people going in there doing things that they shouldn't be doing. There's a lot of things that are going on there. So I'm really, really happy to hear that we're going to have some animal control officers going in there on a regular basis and really hopefully cleaning the place up as far as, you know, the usage. Another positive I heard is that Julie Hannon, maybe have you heard about this, Jennifer? She's offering up a park site to turn into an off-leash area. It's I don't know the name of the park, but it's right behind Ben Plaza off Fourth Point. right behind where, you know, where Target's at,
yeah.
Harbor Freight, in behind there is a linear park that, that goes from Fourth Plain all the way up to, is it Van Mall Drive or whatever it is. And she's talking about as an off-leash area. I thought, wow, that'd be wonderful if the city of Vancouver could actually have their own off-leash area. That would be great. Yeah. I heard the park's not being used by anybody. It sits there unused. And so this would actually bring life into that park.
Is the park right behind that Target?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
The one behind the IHOP?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about turning that one into
an off-leash. I see kids there all the time.
From what I understand from her.
Oh, okay.
So maybe, I don't know if they're going to, you know, turn down the entire thing or a good portion of it. So usually with an off-leash area, you need at least 2 or 3 acres, you know. But yeah. The bigger the better, obviously. But it'll serve a lot of folks that are going all the way out to Ross or out to...
Well, they take their dogs there anyway.
Yeah, so...
it's just up from my daughter's house, so...
We could certainly use a lot more dog parks in the incorporated area of Vancouver. So this is a step in that right direction.
Okay. All right, so moving along to the Development Engineering Advisory Board update. We had our first subcommittee meeting. Maybe, Bill, you had made a presentation to the board on the trails.
I did, yes.
So why don't you update us on that, and then I'll bring us up to speed on the, and Barbara and I can bring us up to speed on the meeting.
Sure. I'm going to give a presentation a little bit about the trails, but I had a meeting with them last week.
Yeah, it was at their meeting, which was last Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, with Dean.
Oh, last Thursday.
Yeah, I gave them a presentation, kind of the same one that I'm going to give you. And first of all, I got to apologize because we normally don't give presentations out of sync. Normally, I always start off with a Parks Advisory Board because of the timing, and they had us on their schedule for a while now to give that presentation. And so I gave them a PowerPoint presentation, and I didn't show them the technical document, but I did show them the summary. Because it kind of played into where the presentation was going. And so with that, we've been directed by the county council to include trails into the park impact fee structure. That's with acquisition and development. And so with that, we had to hire a consultant because this is a pretty good undertaking to make that happen. So we have to change Title 40 of the county code to include trails into the language specifically, because it is silent right now. PIF is used exclusively for park acquisition and development, not necessarily for trails. It does say for open space and recreational facilities, but it's not defined clearly enough that we can go out and actually use PIF dollars for trails. So that's our mission. And so we did that, then also with that, we actually have to change the PIF calculation. So because we're adding trails into PIFs, we need to add that to the calculation. So in all reality, that's going to actually raise the PIFs. So, but the recommendation that came from our consultant was to not necessarily change it, show it in the calculation, but not necessarily raise the PIFs. So I gave that presentation to to the Development Engineering Advisory Board, and they turned around and they made a motion to support the trails. They also made a motion to hold the PIF fees static for right now until more discussions are made. So right now we've got Barbara and Kelsey and Jay that are actually working with DEEB as a subcommittee. So three members from the Parks Advisory Board, three members from DEEB are actually sitting down and talking. And as of this Wednesday of this week, you've had your first meeting. And so I'm hoping that discussion will provide us some direction as to where we should go. And so that discussion above the trails is regarding, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're talking about the introduction or the inclusion of pocket parks with some control over that, and also taking a look at establishing PIF credits for those two items, right?
You want to update how you saw the meeting?
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, you can.
I think the meeting was fortunately on a positive note. You know, it was a little antsy personally. You know, because it has been contentious in the past. but wanting to focus on finding common ground, I'd have to say that we did do that. And I was pleasantly surprised with some of the suggestions coming from Deeb and their acknowledgement that not all builders work with the intentioned heart, I guess you might say, that some of the lands that they try to get credit for are really just not worth any credit. And for them to acknowledge that that happens and that they agree that some type of requirement needs to be spelled out and as to what is acceptable. And along the same lines, I think that we made a good impression as far as the need for these pocket parks to be more than just, number one, for the neighborhood that it's in, and number two, that the content of that park needs to meet specific guidelines. We don't know what they are yet. Eric came up with, he had 10 different ideas, which I think we should maybe send out to the group.
I can put those together.
Because I think it really showed how well-intentioned he came to the meeting, which was, like I said, a real plus, and it really helped set the tone. I'm strongly optimistic that we're going to make some progress with them, along with understanding that the builders are having a real challenge at this time. The market is soft. They've got a lot of new homes that aren't turning, and they have concerns. But like we pointed out, you don't pay the PIF till you sell it, so you got that going for you.
Wait, are you saying that builders are soft right now?
Well, that's what they were saying, yeah, that things are not turning.
Yeah, there's been a couple of news reports that...
I get that they're turning, but they just hit a two-year all-time high that we have never seen happen in construction in the last 20 right. years.
That was so not a statistic I had at my disposal,
I know. I'm just
Jennifer.
Like that almost...
I'm not a builder. I took his word
I know.
For
I,
it.
I hear you. I'm just saying...
Well,
holy
that,
cow,
well,
I'm seeing $450 a square foot.
Then I guess it's their position
it
to cry poor, right?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah,
that's,
well, I can assure you that your
ouch.
Team did not back down.
Ouch.
You know, with them wanting us to back off on the PIFs, because those have been long overdue. They're very much needed, and like I've said before, when they get their other contractors to back down, and start charging what they were charged back in 2003 or whatever, then we'll consider it. But until then, we need to look for other alternatives of where we can come together and build a win-win. The other thing that I found really interesting was when he told us that the price that they pay for land is usually, he said, between 125 and 180. And the absolutely max was 250. And compare that to what we have been paying. That's a real area where they can find land and pick it up in a site and turn it over at that price to us. That would be a big win right there.
If we
find
can,
a partnership,
yeah. If we can,
gotta
use
build that,
that
partnership.
I mean, that it was there was some there was very good synergy about building partnerships.
Yeah,
they're still suffering sticker shock on our PIF fees increasing so much so quickly, and that was
they're just passing it right on to the builders.
Well,
I gotta tell
no,
you.
Of course, and they're not.
I
gonna,
mean, to the
they're not
to
gonna
the sale.
Admit that. Well, it's part of it, and the affordable housing. They're making it sound like we're a bigger part of the puzzle than what I think we are, or what realistically we are. And so, but there was good discussion on, they admit that there should be criteria for smaller parks and how we maintain them. And, you know, and there was some education on both sides, you know, because, you know, we kept bringing up the point of we got to maintain these things. And there's a big, you know, and of course, one of them said, well, you know, What's the difference? I said, well, it's the difference between hand mowing a small pocket park and a gull wing mower, you know,
being able to, on the bigger parks. I mean, that's a huge difference in maintenance costs, and they were like, oh, okay. And so there's some costs there, and there's some education back and forth. But the good news was they were very professional. They were very open to having conversations. They did give us a list of 10 items that they, as a group, had come up with, and I'll get that out as soon as I decipher my own notes. And they did, you know, it's both sides are admitting there's some room to give and take. And we did bring up the point that we're going to start the PROS plan here in about a year and a half, 2 years, and this criteria should be used to be inserted in the PROS plan and update the PROS plan as we go forward, so that we don't get in this situation 6 years from now or 4 years from now or whatever period of time. Because, you know, the cycle goes up and down, and so it may be adjusting now. The building cycle may be adjusting now, but the other side of the coin is, in another couple of years, it may go back up again. So, you know, it's just we've got to figure out some way to kind of create the standards. And they were willing to discuss that. And they used terms like buildable land and non, you know,
so stuff. Just for a little frame of reference, Evergreen School District has passed roughly $800 million. We have roughly $550 million. We've got other CAMAS, other school districts that are producing. Our building community can't keep up with the capacity of work that there is to go out there. And looking at Evergreen's schedule over our schedule alone, we will have a shortage of people to do the work in two years. Starting in two, not this coming summer, but the next summer, we're going to be in a little bit of... They're not soft. They're not, they're making good, they're writing, a lot of their subcontractors are writing in what they'd like for those prices. We're getting one or two people who are bidding on things like $30 million projects. I mean, that's kind of not jiving in some ways, you know?
Well, but if you look, you know, and I totally understand what you're saying, and it has been quite a surge, but, you know, we'll see what happens in the next 2 years. You know, there's
going to be there's going to be $1.5 billion pushed into our community in the building side of the community in the next 2 years,
from
3 years.
From schools and the whole building community?
That's just schools. That's okay. Just two All school right. districts out of the five or six that have right. bonds that have right. passed.
And thinking of the population that's driving that need.
$1.5 billion.
They got to have places to live.
Our city recognizes that there's $1.2 billion just in the city of that is going to be part of their economic drivers.
And that kind of emphasizes why we want to get in front of this with the DEEB and come up with criteria. What is a park land that we can use, the county can use, maintain, and operate? I mean, trails, they were very excited about the trails. And as you mentioned, they passed unanimously. There's a memo in your motion in your package here today that they passed it. Yes, we want trails, and we're willing to put trails in the PIP. Now, they obviously don't want the PIP fees to go up. But they are positive on that, and we talked about that a little bit. They said, you know, we don't mind putting trails in. We put trails in the wetlands edges, but there's some give and take. Some criteria is going to have to shift to allow some of that to happen. So, but the good news was we did have a very positive meeting. We are going to schedule another meeting. I asked everybody to think of, you know, they came up with 10 items that, you know, we need to prioritize like three. And focus on those and try to solve those. Who can't, trying to solve 10 is a little tough. But we'll and the next time we get together, I wasn't unfortunately able to talk to Kelsey after the meeting, but once we get back together, I think we'll probably come up with that prioritized list and then, you know, move forward from there. But
okay.
The good news is we're communicating. The good news is we're communicating positively. So
it might be good to go ahead.
I'm sorry, is it Lisa? Lisa, you had your hand up for a minute during this.
I was only going to comment because I contribute to the real estate section here with the Columbian. And so Portland currently nationally is leading a kind of a I don't want to say stoppage, but we have a 60-day now average that homes are taking to sell. There is a major portion of concern with the interest rates, as well as that we may have finally kind of outpriced ourselves in some regards. That's not to say that people don't need housing. That's not to say that the people aren't here. But those are the numbers that are coming through in regards to, you know, the builders putting something out. And I can't speak to how much their people are costing them. Or, you know, I'm sure there's a labor shortage. I'm absolutely
there's absolutely positive.
But there is a slowing, she's a contributing editor to the Columbian. And we are seeing some populations, like even Seattle now, that they have an exodus going on. But, you know, I'm sure you see the news as much as I do. I can't speak to that so much as here. But we are seeing 60-day lags.
But if they price themselves out of the market, I mean, that statement alone is like, hey, they've got, they've been high on the hog for a while. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It would be good to coordinate this with schools, by the way, because we have upcoming school impact fee dialogue happening with all the school districts, and I know there's a couple school districts that need to go out and update their capital facilities plan, and there will be going forward with an update in their SIP as well.
All right, so that's kind of an update. We'll update the board as we go forward and come up with more information. So,
well, thank you so much for being on that subject.
Yeah, thank you guys. That's going to be a good one.
Yes, sir.
Hey, are you saying that the other group is still wanting to reduce the amount that they pay?
What the statement they made was they wanted to understand what was driving the increase of cost. Or the, you know, the increase of the PIP fees so dramatically, and we've told them the 13-year low, items like that, and you know, and Eric Guillermo used his fees as an example. He said, well, before then, you know, 13 years ago, I charged $100 an hour. Now I'm only charging, you know, $130 an hour, and so. It's not an apples to apples comparison, but what he's saying is over the 13, 14 years, it's only gone up 30%. I don't, you know, and they yeah. want to understand why it is so expensive. And one of the drivers of that, two points is number one, they believe we're paying too much for land because they're hearing astronomical numbers of 200,000 and 300,000, blah, 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 blah. And then the other one was, is that they believe that, the demand factors are off, where they really aren't really practical, and we're not including items like schools and other items in the demand factor of, the one was, well, like a neighborhood with 2 acres per 1,000 residents, and we're at 1.34, and they believe if you contribute the private, and they're saying pocket parks, schools, other items into the park calculation, the factor would be higher. We'd be closer to 1.6 or some number closer to the 2 acre than we are right now.
And we, of course, gave them the standard answers on those as to why those aren't included in the calculation.
Right.
But it was not very palatable to them.
But that's still just smoke and mirrors for them
yeah.
to say that things don't cost as much for us.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Well, and we assured them that we are driven by law, that we can't pay right. more than market value, and that's a lot of times what the lag is between locating a property and getting it is the evaluation of it.
Yeah. And many of those properties are probably being bought from somebody their own people.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's you know, the marketplace drives the price, so... You know, the more activity we have, the higher the prices. We're all in that boat. And whether they can really pay what the numbers are saying, I think you're more an average number instead of, you know, paying. You know, we don't have an area in our parks usually that we can't use, right? We're using the entire area, and we may not have a wetlands. And if we have a wetlands, it's part of the park. It's part used. So there's some finer nuances in there. You could, if you really dwell down into that.
And there was that one comment too, that sometimes the builders are competing with us for the same land, and that if we're willing to pay X amount, then it drives the price up for them.
So I
don't know what truth that is. You know, as I stated up front, I'm not very experienced in the building craft or knowledgeable about how it works.
So that's some of the stuff we'll have to address as we go forward, is how the calculations go. I mean, you know, we've all looked at it, and your eyes glass over, and you start thinking about, you know, what else you could be doing than trying to figure out this calculation sometimes. So anyway, all right, any other questions, thoughts? All right, we'll continue to report back. Developed and undeveloped parkland, Bill.
And you had just said that if there
this
were
designation
updates, if you had taken that back on that letter, that you would provide them up.
Oh, that one. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm looking at that. So, yes, we'll get back to you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Absolutely. So.
Just keeping it
on the forefront.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you for doing that.
Jay, can I interject under new business?
Sure.
So I'll just read an email that I just saw. It came through at 12:30.
Yeah, we saw it.
Has everybody seen it?
I'm not looking at my email.
So,
I'm those paying attention to me.
Those of us who are way too scattered. Okay, so dear Parks Advisory Board, I wanted to let you know that I gave my resignation this morning. This is from Diana Kretschmar. I want to thank you all for your hard work and wonderful ideas. It has been a pleasure to work with you. Today will be my last day, but I cannot thank you enough for the opportunity to be a part of such a wonderful group of people. I know you will be successful and will build a beautiful future for our community. I always will be a huge PAB supporter, Diana. So
that's sort a of surprise.
I would like to propose that we thank her for her service and express our regrets to see her moving on.
Absolutely.
So I think it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
So Jay, you going to write that?
I'll write a letter or write some type of thing, get Laura to help me with it.
Kelly, what's the deal on that? What do you know?
I don't know anything. Sorry.
Darn, I thought you would.
You usually know all the dirt, Kelly.
I know, but I've been kind of
Well, I will.
Wow.
I know a couple of the board members. I'll see you.
I knew she had a sinus infection, but I mean.
That's one hefty sinus infection.
That's a heck of a sinus infection. All right.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Well, starting off new business with a thud. Wow.
John.
Jaw dropping thud. All right. So have we gone through Multnomah Falls Trail?
Yes.
Discussions, and we're all good with that.
Good. So, Kevin Tyler's been kind of running with this project, but couldn't be here today. And so he asked if I could share some information on this again. So, I wanted to just talk about this. So, and thank you for coming in, I appreciate that. So, we've been dealing with DNR for quite some time now. And in fact, it came to us. It was about 2006 when he introduced the proposal to us, and you know, they notified us of what their intent was, and so we.
Sorry,
that's the map for the
local trail. Is that a page number? Is it a part of this report?
No.
No, I don't think so.
It's the memo from Kevin Tyler.
Oh, I got you.
You got it.
There you go. We got it. So when they first approached us, they talked about their intent to do a variable retention harvest in this area here, and we weren't sure exactly what the scope of that was, but what they actually came to us about was this piece of property that the county owns. So everything around it is owned by DNR, all the way through the East Fort Lewis and all the way up to the road. And so the Mobile Fall or Hackman Trail. Basically, here's kind of a trailhead right here. Runs all along East Fork and goes all the way to Moulton Falls. And so they came to us and said, hey, we would like to talk about making a trade with you, if at all possible. And so they really needed this triangle to make their harvest, you know, viable to them. So we talked about it, and then more recently, we talked to DNR, and we talked to RCO at the same time on a conference call, telling them about what the proposed trade would look like. So this parcel here would be traded for a piece of property that where the Fall Trails actually exists right here. Since we've never owned it, it's always been in DNR holding, and we actually lease the right to use that trail and that surrounding area. And so with that, RCO came back to us and said, we really can't do this because you've got one government entity trying to make a trade with another government entity, and that's not really allowable. So the reason it's not allowable is because it's grant encumbered. So when we acquired property, so we own this piece here, we actually own a piece up here as well. And so for us to, and we actually had another separate grant to improve this trail through here many years ago. So we put a bridge in here, put asphalt to a certain point up to these wetlands, and improved the gravel trail with a kiosk that goes up the Bells Mountain Trail. And so they pretty much said, we can't do that. You have to go out and find new land to acquire in exchange for the property. And so we started talking about that, and we really didn't come up with any viable properties that we could actually make that happen, to make the exchange. So we then pulled back and basically said, let's talk about doing a trust land transfer. You know, so we would just acquire the land from DNR, this piece through here, about a 250-foot buffer from the trail up the hill. So it's this band right here. And to see if that would be acceptable. Of course, when we do a DNR trust land transfer, that has to go to the legislature for approval and to see if that's going to be funded. If it is, then we can move forward. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. Our last trust land transfer from the piece that's up off of Tooth Mountain did not go through for us. Of course, that was a very difficult time when there was a lot of turmoil going on with the legislature. That was that whole water rights on the east side of Washington that delayed everything. So it could have been just timing. Our intent is hopefully to own this trail and the land surrounding it. We would love to see, at least if we can't get more, at least this buffer here to be put into county ownership so that we have it free and clear from now on, so we have assurances that it will stay.
So the buffer we're talking about is that red line that's sort of going to the bottom.
Yeah, this red line right here. Yeah. So okay. The trail is way up here. The 250-foot buffer kind of brings you up above our parcel here. And so this is kind of the view shed that's going to be maintained, supposedly. But there again, then you've got this other park here that Linda's concerned about as well. So I don't know if they would allow us to take on the entire site. Right now, our actual proposal talks about this buffer, the 250 foot. So DNR did say that they're going to postpone the harvest until May, I believe. But they actually, I don't know if they're going to delay it further than that. I don't know yet. So this is going to be kind of we have to wait for it to evolve just a little bit further before we have more answers from them. So, and we don't know where this is going to go, quite frankly. So,
well, the great thing about that potential land gain is I understand there's some real value to the timber there.
You forgot.
Kelly, I think he was being facetious. You can't see the facial expression.
If you do walk this trail, and I know a lot of us have, it's actually this beautiful piece of property, it's pristine. You feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere. The only disturbance you hear is every once in a while you hear a car going by, trucks and cars and stuff going on the other side of the river. But it's a beautiful view shed. And so we're hoping that we can at least, if nothing else, and we have no serious jurisdiction over DNR, we can request things from them. And we hope that they listen, And so far they have been, which I'm really, really thankful for. And all the work that you're doing is actually really helpful because it stopped them to really sit back and take a look at what the proposal is here. And they know that how precious this trail is to all the users. And so hopefully they'll convey that message and allow us to at least have what we're asking for. So that's my hope going forward.
So the request for them to review the landslide document,
potential, yes.
Would that in any way frustrate them and inhibit this process? I don't want to ruffle feathers.
I don't think so. I mean, it's a simple question that we're asking them. You know, have you done your own study on this to see, you know, what cut and timber? I know they've done several clear cuts in the areas around. In fact, if they maybe look closer, if they go farther,
you can see that it's been cut.
You can see the difference there. And so I don't know if they've done studies in the distant past and included this area,
yeah.
Or if in their minds that when they do a clear cut, they come back and replant all the roots from all the stumps. You know, they're going to take about 20 years to degrade. By that time, the new growth will have taken up and put a whole new root system in the hillside. I don't know what their line of thinking is on this. That's what we need to find out. So,
and it's worth the ask, regardless.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, and. Very well
what did you say?
I was going to say something. When you get Chet.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dylan.
Can we have a park tour of that area in December where we can see all that together, and so we can understand it better?
I think, Kelly, we talked about doing it maybe in our next field trip, which was going to be the 21st, but I think we'll push that off until October-ish time frame, or October month. But that is one of the key areas we can go look at. Both John Spencer and Bill, you know, thought that would be worth a field trip for the board.
Yeah, that'd be great if you can lead us up there. That'd be wonderful.
So, Leonora's leading us up there October 5th. Okay. You could have
a broth
and a couple other people from DNR. It's going to get out of DNR's hands soon. This trust land transfer happens because then it goes to the legislature. So DNR doesn't have anything to do with it after that.
Right.
It's the state of Washington who will decide.
Who's talking?
Whether you're going to get that one
from. That's Lisa, right?
Linda.
I knew it was an L name. she was our first guest speaker that talked about Multnomah Falls.
On Multnomah Falls.
It's hard when you can't see.
Yeah.
So Linda's been a huge advocate so far in preserving, the trail and the timber around this entire area here that constitutes the entire viewshed of this trail.
And so the Michigan Trotter Clearcut is actually 5 parcels. This is only one of the 5. So it seems to me that DNR could let this one go, but we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, when they first approached us, they were mostly concerned or interested in this site up here, down to the trail itself. They didn't want this piece down to the river. They said we'd leave that alone for a view shed, but they definitely were interested in the piece going all the way down to the trail itself, and they needed this piece to access in here. So since then, there's been a lot of change in heart, if you will, as to how they're viewing this. So. Hopefully we'll make some strides as we move forward. So I think what we probably do is ask Kevin to give us an update at the next meeting. So he should be here and he can give us a little bit more detail, if you will.
Sorry.
We do have a couple of trust fund transfers that we are working on right now. And that is the one that I just talked about that didn't go forward back about a year ago. And that's the Along the Slouchy Trail by Battleground Lake State Park. And then the other piece is actually inside of Camp Monadum. So there's a piece of DNR land that's actually inside of our fenced area that we'd like to get our hands on.
Okay.
So is that okay for right now? No? All right. So yeah, we're with you on this. We want to make sure that we definitely want to make sure that we retain some ownership of this. We've been wanting that for a while. We didn't even know that we didn't own it until more recently we noticed that was ours. We've been maintaining it for years. We got a grant on it a couple decades ago and actually enhanced that trail dramatically. So.
Well, you mentioned the north part of the trail. DNR couldn't touch it.
Yeah.
So it's not like they chose to give that to us or is being high against. They can't touch it. It's
good. So their primary interest was this piece right here from us. So that's what started the whole conversation in the first place with us. Okay.
All right.
We'll provide more as we learn more.
Thanks.
Thanks for the visuals, because these are always really helpful.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
And then the Camp Curry Lackamas Trail grant conversion, you need a motion on this.
You know what? I think I'm going to go for a motion on the at our next meeting. Because okay. We, in order for us to do a public outreach component, which is this right here, there's a couple things that we need to do ahead of time. And just to make sure that one thing that did not get done was the city of Camas. Let's pull that up there so I can show you what's going on. The city of Camas, in conjunction with the sewer line project, they needed about a 7,000 square foot area to place a pump station, and that's at Camp Curry, which you've seen on our trip as you went by. You've seen the pump stations in there. So that created a grant conversion. And so with the grant conversion, you've got to go out and find equal or better value property to replace that. And so we're trying to figure out with the city of Camas how we can best do that and meet our goals at the same time. So Camp Curry, 232nd down here, this is all Camp Curry right here, all this land right here. And so the camp is actually down off site here. But so in exchange for that piece of property, they worked with the Columbia Land Trust, who owns this piece right in here, this entire piece right here on this side of the creek. That's a 280,000 square foot area. They took a piece of that out of the 14,000 square feet, which is twice the size of the piece that we lost for the pump station. And you see if Columbia Land Trust would sell that property to us in exchange. And so that's what we're working on right now. So right now, here is the existing trailhead parking lot for the Lackamas Heritage Trail that runs along the whole western and southern portion of Lackamas Lake. And we own all this property here. And we want to go across Lackamas Creek. We own this piece here. We just need to come along Columbia Land Trust property to connect back into the trail. So we'll cross the creek over to our land, and then this trail right here, we'll come all the way back down to 232nd. This is right here. This trail is the one I wanted to drive you on our trip. That the gate was locked, so I couldn't get you inside of it. This is it. So the future trail is going to go all the way around Lackamas Lake. So Ledbetter Road will actually be closed off and become a multi-use trail. So the whole north shore of Lackamas. And so this will make that connection, that critical connection. So this grant conversion is actually going to help us out, because it's going to allow us to make that connection back into the main trail system. So the city of Camas also purchased this piece right here. It's a 1 acre piece, so they could double the size of the trailhead parking. So the problem is with that, after they bought it, they realized that it is wet. So
and
it's after? Full of, how do you do that after?
It's full of archaeological relics as well. So there's like
two at it the wrong time of the season.
So their heart was in the right place, but
oh, no.
There's not much they can do with it, so it's got to stay the way it is. So that's unfortunate, because that parking lot gets used a lot. So the hope is that working with Jerry Atchison, he's the park director for Camas, he would love if we could install someplace up here in the northern part of Camp Curry, a parking lot, another trailhead parking lot, so that we can take the pressure off this one. So that is the plan going forward. So as it is with grant conversions, it takes a long time. So here's what's holding us up, which is why I can't go after a motion today, is that they got an appraisal on this piece here, but to do it right, you gotta get an appraisal on the entire piece and then get a secondary appraisal on this piece. That didn't happen. So we're gonna have to see the canvas go back and get the entire piece appraised, and then that should satisfy RCO's requirement. Then we can go up to a public process, which is our meeting here today. So that'll help. So I don't think, when we document a public process, we want to make sure that all their documentation is up in RCO ahead of the public process. Otherwise, it's all litigated. Okay?
Okay.
So I hope is that pretty clear? Is there any questions on that?
Super clear. You're not going to be able to see that pump station from the third tee, are you?
From the third tee?
It's the tee box for the third hole at Camas Meadows.
Oh no, the pump station's way down here. So,
okay, very good.
But there is another pump station, right? This is Angle Road right here.
Yeah.
This is the one that goes over Green Mountain. All that's being developed. There's a pump station right here.
All right. Far away from that.
Yeah.
So that
just for fun.
The camp. The camp above Camp Kirby, the private, I think it's a church camp.
Oh, that's right here.
That thing.
Yep.
So first, that's a smaller piece of land than I always thought, because we've got all these other chunks around it. Is anything going on with them as far as?
They're really, they're not nice to play with. They're an interesting group of folks, and they're really territorial. Mm-hmm. And so when Camus had to put a pump station up here to serve all of Green Mountain, that was on their land, they actually had to condemn it to get it. It's a utility, so it's not recreational property. So that they said that was quite a battle. So for us, I mean, if they were willing to think about selling it at some point in the future, we'd take it. But I don't know if they ever want to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a nice piece of property right along the creek. It's kind of cool. But you know, I'm really happy that you know we do have a trail already established. A trail that goes along the golf course and it falls all the way down. It goes all the way down to their community center, their lodge. It's neat. And so we're not that far away from making this an entire loop trail around the lake.
That is so exciting.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
That's some neat stuff.
You're right. That parking lot is packed all the time.
Yeah. We're really hoping that they can add like 24 more stalls in that 1 acre. That would be cool. But
darn.
They got shot down. All right.
Little gravel can't fix.
All right. So then the next one is the PIF edition of the trails, and you need a motion.
Yeah. So I got over.
And this is the public outreach part.
Yeah. I'll bring that presentation real quick. I didn't bring my actual hand copy with me. It's on the printer. So sorry about that. I
hate that when that happens.
So. This is what I present to Deeb. I made a couple changes because I noticed that the PowerPoint is a little tweaky, and so I made a couple of changes, but nothing significant. But so just background, Clark County Parks Division was created in 2014 after our local was dissolved with the City of Vancouver. So that was unfortunate, very unfortunate, but it did happen, and so we had to create a new Parks Division. And so that happened as it was established January 1, 2014. And our first mission was to form a new Parks Advisory Board, which we did. In August of 2014 was our first meeting. That's been 4 years already, you imagine that? 4 years of a month, my goodness.
It is crazy.
So in September 2015, Clark County adopted the Parks Recreation Open Space Plan. So that was the first mission of our Parks Advisory Board was to basically revise or create our new growth plan, which we did. You guys championed it. You did a wonderful job. I really appreciate all the work that you did put into that. So along with the growth plan, of course, was the capital facilities plan. So that was all created. And the basic purpose of the growth plan is to allow us to be eligible for grants from the state. Okay. So the State Growth Management Act, grants cities and counties the authority to assess park impact fees on new development. That was actually established in 1994. So in 2016, the county approved an update to the parks impact fee program to reflect current costs. So that hasn't been done since 2003, as we all well know. So hence the huge increase that's being discussed currently. And so, no, I'm really so thankful for the increase because it really is making a difference. It's allowing us to do some things with acquisitions and development that we would have been delayed on pretty significantly. So this is great. Okay. Also, the direction of the county. So two of our counselors actually asked us to pursue including trails in with the park impact fees so we could acquire and develop trails. In our urban unincorporated area, if you will. So the state statute and county code are silent on the usage of impact fees for trails. Basically, the county code states that we can use impact fees for parks and open space and recreational components, but it doesn't specifically state trails. So it's a little bit, it's too narrowly defined. So our intent is to actually put that language into Title 40 so it's clearly defined. So this year, discussions on the usage of impact fees to support trails back to the 1990s, And that's true. I was talking to Steve Dew, who is a park planner back then. That discussion has been talked about over and over again, that proposal. It's just never been acted on. So that's actually what we're doing right now. So we're actually going to take it and make it a reality. So here's the PIF calculation in its most simplistic form. If you want to take a look at it in its reality, grab the show it to you here.
Technical document on page.
The technical document, you can actually look at the.
Six. Yeah,
it is
on page six.
Page six, yeah, there it is. It's full glory. With all of the.
So give this to those
guys. Basically, what that
is. And a calculator.
So what we're looking at, PIF equals acquisition cost plus development cost minus the adjustment factor. And so that is what the PIF calculation is. So what we're proposing is to include trails. So acquisition cost, development cost, plus trails, and then minus adjustment factor. The adjustment factor is our per thousand, if you will. See, minus cost, adjustment factor, the summary, yeah. So if you look at the calculation here, it says plus T, which stands for trails. So that is our addition to it. Okay.
And just real quickly, as I understand this, that plus T is a short form of saying trails divided by population.
Yeah.
It's the same format.
Yeah, because the U is the population. Yeah.
So the one thing you're going to see is this calculation here is based on our service levels. So that it's affected by our service levels, where. So that, you know, when we need 2,000 or 2 acres per thousand for neighborhood, 3 acres per thousand for community parks, and 1 acre per thousand for open space, the trails are not going to be under that same kind of scrutiny. They're going to be based on our capital facilities plan. What we identify for projects, that's what that cost calculation is going to be based on. Okay. So I was talking to Steve about that kind of at length, and I said, do we need to establish a standard, how many miles per thousand?
Level of service type again.
What's that?
Level of service again.
Yeah, level of service, yeah. And so he said, that's probably shouldn't do that because that's not what all these other agencies are doing. We're actually identifying what's our need based on citizen input for trails. And so identifying that in our capital facilities plan, we put a dollar value to that, then we do our calculations off of that.
So the only comment I would have to that is looking forward in our discussions about PIF calculations, mm-hmm. is though they, DEB, I'm going to use them as an input, would turn around and say, okay, why don't you do that for your parks and other things too?
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, just food for thought,
mm-hmm.
that if we, you know, use a different service level factor, if you will, for one segment of the, you know, one aspect of it, then they may want to see a second. And you know, again, these guys are all, and I'm an engineer, so I'm throwing mud at myself, but these guys are engineers and developers, and they know how to calculate, and they'll just, you know, they'll start wheeling away numbers and everything else. So anyway, just a thought,
right,
as we go forward with that. I think it's a good idea. But they may want to see, or somebody may want to see consistency in how all of them are figured out.
It's possible, yeah. And that's something, we got to pass this by the board and
see what they have to say
about that.
Yeah.
I think it's a good point to bring up. I mean, if we were to go off just our capital facilities plan, you know, we got $114 million in projects identified.
Right.
It would probably jack our rates up pretty
well. Well, and so that's a great point, because that was one of the points that's Steve, is that his name? The gentleman that works for the wastewater?
Water.
Steve Aiken said, he says, well, that's what we did, is we figured out what our demand was over the next 10 years, divided by 10, and then, you know, we figured out how to get it
right
from there.
But then there was what Eric also said, which was what we said, he says, you don't need a Cadillac.
Right.
And we said, our PROS plan had to reflect the actual community need.
Right.
And not what we could afford. It had to reflect the need.
And so in that case, he didn't want it.
Right.
He wants...
They want it both ways.
Yes.
Whichever one's the least number.
Exactly.
You know, they want.
But so. We need to be armed. I think you're right. We need to have a clear, concise, logical explanation that an engineer can accept.
Right.
There right, you go.
We have our standards that we have identified in our post plan right
yeah,
now.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Per thousand.
Well said.
You know, we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about modifying those possibly.
Well, and that's part of what we'll use this conversation for is, you know, we're looking at everything's up for discussion mm-hmm. when we go back into our pros plan, not beforehand necessarily. But, you know, that and let them have input this time, you know.
They had input.
And they, I know you and Kelly
just,
get after me when I say that. I know. They, oh, we never knew. And, you know, yada. But, and Kelly.
They had no input. No.
See, he's yelling now. I can hear Kelly.
Yeah.
On the road.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Kelly's not that.
So, anyway, just a food for thought. I just, you know, I mean, when I'm sitting here listening to this, I think it's a great idea, but that's one of the big points that Steve Bacon yeah. made was, yeah. Yeah. Hey, when I'm at the, you know, the wastewater area, you know, nobody wants to pay for the wastewater treatment plant, but you need it. You know, it's a necessary evil to go through.
Yeah,
so.
It could very well, if we decide to go that way, it could very well scrap this existing calculation, you know. And then
but if it shows that we need more, then, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, guys, you wanted to have this conversation. Here it is. And I'm sure they'll go, well, then let's the lesser of
well,
the two.
And we all know from mm-hmm. our open houses that in Clark County, trails were number one.
Yes.
And defined by... our yes. constituents, that was their top priority. So they may not want to go down that street.
So do we need to have a standard for trail development in our back pocket for these discussions?
I don't know. I asked Steve that question. I said, because that's where I was going originally.
Yeah.
My thought was, okay, we need to set up a standard for trails. How many acres or miles per thousand? Yeah. And he says, well, trails are not really calculated that way. So right. It's a different animal, he said. So that's why he...
Well, and it's maybe, a fine justification
yeah.
for...
Yeah.
For
that actually came up with a much better explanation than what I'm giving you today. But he says it's a uniquely different animal that you can calculate it differently than
yeah.
you would with park properties. You know, that's definitely...
So there's no... He's saying that no other jurisdictions measure trail performance in that way.
There's several other jurisdictions that actually have PIFs within, have trails within their PIFs, uh-huh. even locally here, but they measure it differently as well.
Yeah.
So
there's no
we're
consistent
following,
standard.
Well, except for we're consistent with the standards of others
yes.
on both
so
things.
So if you look at a statewide level,
so we're looking at,
correct.
Right.
We're looking
right.
at national norms and not.
In fact, in here somewhere, shows,
because correct isn't always same.
Yes.
So I find it actually shows all the local jurisdictions around us, plus all the different counties and cities within Washington State that already have trails.
You have that page listed on the other slide.
Is that?
And that's one of the arguments
okay.
they had against us
that's
for our
forward, I'll show that to you.
Demand. So,
yeah.
So go
that's
back
all good.
Real quickly, Jeremy. Let's go back one slide.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail
oh,
the conversation,
no,
but it,
no,
it,
no,
it,
it's a good one. And you're right, we do need to be well prepared.
So we're only asking to include trails into the Title 40, you know, and then of course show the new change up in the calculation. So the park boundaries will remain the same, but they may be revisited at a later time. So our original intent when we're going into deed was to talk about park boundaries, consolidation of districts, if you will. That was the actual purpose of that meeting. So we switch it over to trails because that's what we're actually working on right now.
But are we going to do that?
We're talking about it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. In fact, we've got that on Steve's scope of work to do. He just couldn't get it to us by August, by the end of August. Because this is going on the docket.
Okay.
Yeah. So he couldn't do both. So we chose trails.
Super.
But since that was driven by the counselors to pursue. So got the calculation. Let's move forward. So just to refamiliarize yourself with our districts. Now, the city of Vancouver has changed their districts. They have A, B, and C. Is that right, Jennifer? So,
yeah, 1-3 or A, B, C. I can't remember.
Yeah, they have A, B, C. So
but they
one,
did like that.
Yeah, one is left of I-5, 2 is in between I-5, 205, and C is east of 205. Mm-hmm. We're talking about doing the same thing way back in 2014 as a possibility. Mm-hmm. So combining our districts into the three. And so as it stands right now, so the city's got basically what we call districts 1, 2, 3, and 4. We essentially have half of 5, most of 6, most of 7, most of 8, all of 9, all of 10. And so actually Steve is going to be working on consolidating districts as a part of his program, and I'll show that to you later on and we'll decide if it's a good idea or not. When it comes to adding trails, it's going to be a lot easier to pay for trails with three districts instead of several of them.
Sure.
A lot of our trails that are interconnecting Clark County run through all of our districts, so trying to really watch those monies, how they're spent in each and every category, it's going to be easier if the districts are combined. So.
Does this include the annexation currently, the gray, the city of Vancouver? Isn't it up further?
It's
not on this.
It's not on this one.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's in here.
Yeah.
So I think we're 50-50 right now at Cliff 7, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. So we're talking about Title 40 again. Repeats verbatim the definition for public facilities and system improvements from the RCWs for local impact fee ordinance. So the actual language is parks, open space, and recreation facilities. So the idea is to include trails in that. So the common industry interpretation would include trails as recreation facilities. That's kind of how we view it. And so numerous municipalities across the state incorporate trails as a recreation facility in their planning fees. So all of these documents right here pretty much outline what our goals and priorities are. We have the comprehensive plan, Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan, our PROS plan, which is our capital facilities plan as well, Trails and Bikeway Systems, Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, and Parks Capital Facilities Plan. So all those identify all the trails that we've got, both regional trails and ancillary trails within the county that we would like to see moving forward. And then we've got them pretty well documented already. So it should be pretty simple to say, okay, here's our trails. And then in fact, some of the priorities, we've got the 6 to 20 year plan of the cap facilities plan. So we'll show that to you here in a second. So here's the language that Steve came up with. I'll just read it out. The impact fee component for parks, open space, and recreational facilities has already written, better to include, which includes the acquisition and development of public open spaces devoted to public parks, playgrounds, and trails, and other recreational purposes, shall be calculated using the following formula. So here's where it includes the trail cost. Okay. So the cost that we've got shown in our capital facilities plan, all the projects that we have identified for acquisition and development come to the $10,593,000. That's what Steve based his calculation on. And so, as a part of that formula, so he's got the growth proportion to be paid by impact fees, $451,000. The growth of the population coming up is $6,577. So the growth cost per capita or per person for impact fees is $68.62. That would be added to the current PIF rates, if you will. So we'll show that in a second here. Okay, so here's our trail acquisition in our cap facilities plan. Here's all the acquisitions, and here's all the developments. All together in this column, it comes down to the $10,613 that was identified in the PIF calculation.
You mean million, yeah?
Yep, 10,613,000.
Big numbers.
Big numbers, yeah, it is. Okay, so here's our current PIF rates. So when they were implemented in 2017, here's our current rates for each of the districts, not counting the four inside the city. And so here's where we're at right now. So they went from 3482 to 3918. In PIF 5 this year. The next year they're expected to go up to 4353, so that's a complete 100% integration of the PIF increase. Okay, so when we here's the current PIF rate for 2018. So 3,918 for PIF 5. If we include the trails, given that new calculation, it brings it up to 4,088. So that's the $68 I was telling you about per capita. And so what's being proposed, given the circumstances, we're talking to Deeb, the proposal was to, even though we've calculated the increase in, let's just leave it at the same rate that it is right now. So that's what I wanted to get your approval on, as well as, you know, saying yes to including the trails into the calculation, but are you okay with keeping the same cost?
And why would you keep it at the same cost?
It's so minor. Are the builders really that upset about a $68?
I think just by adding...
They're not upset about the $68. They're upset about the increase in junk.
Yeah,
the
so...
First 90%, if you will.
So they went from the $1,800 that they used to pay to $39. That's what they're upset about already.
Okay.
So this is kind of like adding insult to injury.
Yeah.
This one here. So just as a goodwill, if you will, to leave it at that right for right now.
But Bill, if you know, I
think
have
it
a
makes
fundamental
a difference
question.
From talking with them, Jennifer.
Well, I have a fundamental question, and we struggle with this with school impact fees, is if you have a calculated rate that you're not asking for, are you in some way violating your own code and you're liable for the difference? Or is that only because school districts pass it, we decide we want the full amount, and if county says, well, we're not going to charge the full amount, someone has to be accountable for the difference because our board says full amount, you guys say not. But
it has to be something with a public share or something like that.
Right. Yeah. There's some weirdness that goes on there. Mm-hmm. So does it not, it doesn't work the same way for you if you calculate it at a higher rate, if maybe there's no other governing body that is in between you and the counselors, so it really doesn't matter if the counselors pass the lower rate, it just is what it is.
Right, and I don't think there is, but.
No, you're only talking about a delay of a year of implementing the rate, right?
Okay.
It's not forever? Uh-huh.
So right now,
I'm asking. I don't know.
So for right now to implement this, to begin of 2019, this is the recommendation going forward, is to we're going to include that rate into the calculation for trails, but we may not implement it. So
until
probably when we do the PIF calculation again, you know, when we take a look at PIF rates.
We said we were going to do that annually, though, didn't we? That we were going to, going forward, make
inflation.
Adjustments?
There's an inflation factor.
Typically, when we do this, it's every time we update the post plan, it's when we do the calculations, but they can be done each and every year.
I thought we actually had an inflation factor built.
We did.
Yeah.
3%. That is.
Yeah.
An inflation factor is a part of this.
Okay,
as well.
So we're just talking about
okay.
a full
We're talking about the actual PIF rates. So.
And when is the post plan up again?
2021. So I
have some heartburn over this because it's kind of like saying
we don't really need it.
We have this need, but we're just kidding. It's not a real need.
It's a real need. I mean, we're given the current climate with the builders right now.
We
can implement that. We can. It's going to be. It might make
well, that's where I'm just looking at a delayed implementation,
mm-hmm.
not waiting till 2021 or whatever.
But it wouldn't be because the inflation would be based on this number, not the extra $68, right? Like
right,
you wouldn't
that.
Add it on after this first year.
So, I mean, if we decide, we could add it on after the first year, but it would be based on the next year's numbers, yeah.
Right.
So.
So if you don't implement that 68, you're not getting it at all until possibly 2021.
Right.
Or unless we were asked to right. do the PIF calculation again,
right.
to take a look at it and see what the current market is at.
Right.
Which, you know, the council could certainly do that. The way that this was implemented, if you will, was a very interesting vote. I was pleasantly surprised that it passed. And so I know that we have two counselors who are concerned about this rate. that we that we're at right now, and at any given time they can say, hey, we want you to go back out, or they can actually say, we don't want to pay this much, let's go back down to the 25% year orientation. Right. So I'm really trying not to go there. I would love to see us hang on to what we've got right now. So if we introduce, I know it's just it's a very minor amount, but if we were to actually increase that, I think it's gonna prompt a revision to the entire county.
That is right, something to weigh against, yes.
Yeah, well, I agree with you that Deeb is hypersensitive about this issue and where they may find it palatable to keep things status quo as of now and not ask for a fallback. If we do push for this, I do see them becoming quite aggressive.
I'm not so much concerned about you guys.
That's the council. Yeah.
Our council is the ones I'm concerned about because they're the ones that changed on this.
But if they push on those councilors.
Oh, yeah.
But they asked, the councilors asked for the trails to be looked at, right?
The council asked for the trails to be looked at.
But that doesn't really mean they thought it through.
No.
Trails into it is something. I totally understand what you're saying. So I guess my thought is we can go to the councilors and say, here's what we've, you know, as per your request or as per our thoughts, here it is. This is the $68 and some odd cents is the increase the trails would have. We believe the trails is a good thing to have and we should put it in there. Can we leave it up to them to decide what?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you can have the fifth bedroom, but it can't come for free.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what, you know, I mean.
So go back to the last slide.
They ain't giving anything.
So because we are implementing our full implementation, we're actually raising our rates. So this was last year. This year we're right here. Next year we're going to be at $4,353. So if we had that $68 here, that's going to be higher yet. That's what the council's going to see. And I don't know. I mean, it's really...
That's
because we're actually increasing our PIFs on an annual basis until we get that 100%.
Right.
So we're adding another thing on top of that next year's increase.
Yeah.
It's a little sketchy. It's a little touchy.
I don't know. I personally would rather get the 400 than the 68. I mean, if...
Exactly.
And perfect world, you get it all. But.
Can you say that then that when the new rates go in 19, this number will be cut? I'd rather say that.
Or maybe in 20. In 20 it then goes.
Right. But, either way, if you say, I'm with Dave, I'd rather have the 400 than...
It needs to be shown that 68. This was part of that calculation, and it should be on top of it.
And it's going to be in there. It's going to be in this perspective document. Yeah. So we're saying that, because we have an increase coming in 2019, so that's actually when that $68 would be implemented, is in 2019, not 18.
Right.
So this, we can show that, because we already have an increase coming, we decided to delay that $68 until, say, the following year, 2020.
I would take that approach and try to get the full PIF rate.
Well, that way you're implementing trails right away with the percentage increase that you're moving forward with.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it could be 6 or so years before. And then, God forbid the builders get soft and then they're gonna really cry about that.
But when our discussions with the, we said, what if we don't do the 10% increase next year? And they that made no dent to them at all. What they turned around and said, we don't like the increase that you already got of, and they're saying it's 300 to 350%. And, and I don't know what number they were comparing
it against. 161% increase.
Okay, 161%. So, we can use that as part of our justification to get the next 10%.
Because
this trailer would drive that far. But.
And we're less 13 years.
I'm going to side. Basically, Bill's convinced me. I do not want to take this to the council in any way to give them the opportunity to open this back up again.
Right.
Because that would be chancy extreme.
Sure.
So if by going with the staff recommendation is the most likely to safeguard what we've got, I'll agree.
It starts up to you. I mean, if
I agree.
And the thing to consider is, if school districts don't go, the majority of us don't go this year, which is really next year, January 20. We're going to go the next year, 21. So there's either going to be a...
To go for...
To we have to put our capital facilities plan back out.
Oh, okay.
When you do put a capital facilities plan back out, and we're required to every so many years, we're required to update the fee calculation, and then our board decides whether they're going to implement it or not, and then that's put forward to the county to implement or not. And somewhat, the county's hands are a little bit tied. If they don't implement what our board asks, we've got a weird issue we have to solve. But just in terms of timing of all of that, it's just something to think about and consider. If school districts were coming before, of those who are ready and in need of updating their capital facility plan, which I think there's only a couple smaller districts, it would be this October 1, bring it before their boards in February, bring it before the Planning Commission in June. Then it would come to the City Council to be adopted before that January 1 of 2020. Otherwise, it's that same cycle, 1 year pushed out, and they're all going. All the rest of them are going. Gonna need to go, actually. Required. Just thinking in terms of timing, because we know what happened the last time that all happened, when home rates went through the roof and school construction has gone through the roof. There is no way you can mitigate that on the formula. It just is what it is. And then all of a sudden you've got another significant increase for school districts.
Yeah.
That's going to play against you.
Well, the one thing that we've kind of advocated in the past, you know, when it came to the PIF fee rates, the rate increases back in 2009, those calculations were actually done. And the percent increase was actually higher than it was that we settled on here in 2015, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They don't seem to buy that, but it was just never acted on because we're going into a recession. But those years leading up to it was a significant mm-hmm. building period, and it really skyrocketed the prices of property and development. Oh, yeah.
And that's so, what's going to happen with this next round of school districts. There's just no way to get around that.
Right.
It's just, so, yeah.
You know, I mean, if we're to go back out and look at PIF rates again this coming year, it very well be higher than it is now because those property values have been going up. And so then it comes down to, you know, the councilors decide on what they want to act on that. So I'm hoping, I mean, I'm really pleased with the fact that we've gotten this far, that we've done this. I'm scared, I'm a little leery about rubbing some salt in the faces. And then, you know, triggering something. And, you know, just this process alone could actually trigger that. We're including trails. Just that discussion, they would say, hey, once you go.
Well, that's what I'm worried about, is they're opening Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, they've asked us to come to them with trails, so.
Yeah, it's got some air. And then, of course, we're going to do it again next year. Yeah. When we start looking at all the stuff you're working on with Deed and the consolidation of PIF districts, so. We're not through with this yet. This year we'll do the trails, next year we'll do the rest. So, okay. Anyways, I want to get your feel on this, and I apologize for not bringing this to you first before I went to deed with this.
So you need a motion on this, or
a motion to support this, to conclude trails, you know.
What did Deeb say before you do the motion, not that it's going to change anything, but what did they say about the $68 increase? Thank you for not implementing it, or it's not so bad.
They were really, really concerned about the increase. They see the calculation and said, oh, now you're going to add more. And then they said, well, our recommendation is not to.
That was where you got your support, though, was when you said we're looking at not implementing it.
Right.
And then that's when we got the motion
that
supported it. And you note how in their motion, Jennifer, they included that fact.
Yes.
So that tells you how important that aspect was.
Yeah. Okay.
So move to support staff recommendations as presented.
Need a second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Yeah, actually, I wonder, I don't know if this is a staff recommendation, more so that it should be a Park Advisory Board recommendation?
What was it? Well, the park impact fee change was right by staff, right?
But it was driven by a request.
Yeah.
Well, from let's us. Just be clear then. So move to include trails in the in the PIF calculations and definitions, but to not.
And to keep the current.
To keep the current
rate increase.
Approved rate increases.
Dave already wordsmithed it for you for exactly what you're
looking
for.
Go ahead.
Dave's like leading you one word at a time. I'm loving it. Was perfect.
Kelly, go ahead.
Nice work.
I said I think that needs to be two different things, two different votes.
Not a bad.
Yeah, here. What was that?
Well, I don't think we. What do you think the two votes are?
Well, I was listening to John and he said first we support the trail added. Then he said and I just think those are two different things.
That's
let's
fair.
See the deep one read support including trails in the parks plan. Also. Yeah.
And that's one vote.
And then it says also approve keeping PIFs as is until reviewing the plan holistically at a later date.
So those are two different things. Let's vote them separately.
Okay.
All right. So the first motion is for the Parks Advisory Board to vote in favor of including trails into the PIF program, if you will.
PIF calculation, yeah.
Well, PIF calculation.
Yeah, PIF program, I think, is actually better said.
All right. So, Dave, you got that, or?
Yep.
Okay. So it's been moved. I assume a second is
somewhere in the mix.
Somewhere in the mix.
There you go.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right. The second motion, John, do you want to make that?
Copy off of Deeb's move to approve keeping PIFs as is until reviewing the plan holistically at a later date.
Can I make a suggestion that we keep the trails in the PIF, the PIF increases as planned or agreed?
Pretty sure that's probably smart. Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And not talk about holistic reviews of any other type of parts. Is that
also
okay?
Good with that.
Okay.
Are you good with that revision?
Absolutely.
John, Bill, are you okay with that?
Yes, I am.
Bill says he is. All right, so it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Those opposed?
Discussion first.
Oh, discussion first. All right, Kelly. Sorry.
Jennifer, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Can you buy into what they're saying there?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes good sense. If I could vote, I would vote like them, like everyone.
Okay, I wanted to hear your vote. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Will.
All right. After further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, two motions carry.
Thank you.
All right. So now we go to...
So Bill, will this allow you to then spend, at the very minimum, it will allow you to spend park impact fees on trails?
Yes.
Without question.
So if this gets passed, right, mm-hmm. I will be able to spend monies that are collected...
Already.
After...
Darn.
Yeah, I won't be able to spend previously.
Can we make a motion to spend retroactively on trails?
I wish we could, but we can't.
Just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. It's worth an ask.
It's the same as our combined funds.
Yeah.
It would be nice to go back and reallocate some of those.
It's a long time to build a trail.
Yes.
All right, so now we're on to the manager's report. I don't know, Bill, have you got anything new?
Have you been doing anything, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, so, we'll check in with you.
So we've undergone some changes here lately that's been interesting for us and countywide. So we've got our new county manager in place, Sean Hennessy. I've had a chance to be with him on several occasions on different topics and parks, and he seems to be a really good guy. I really appreciate having him on board. Keith gave us his notice about 4 weeks ago.
that he is moving over to Clark Regional Wastewater. So he's going to be our next door neighbor. He left last Tuesday, or Tuesday of this week was his last day. And so before he left, obviously, in the last few months, I think I talked to you about it, because of the consolidation of environmental services as a department into public works, he went from you know, seven reports to like 14 reports. So we brought on a public works deputy director to help Heath out, to split it up. And so Ahmad Kayomi is our new deputy public works director. However,
it's wrong.
So because of Heath leaving, he is just reappointed as the interim county public works director.
He came in our meeting the other day.
Yes,
there at the meeting.
Oh, did he? Good.
Yeah, he saw Eric Guillermo and a couple other guys.
There's somebody drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, so he was going to be stationed out at operations and be over parks, roads, shops, waste for the sewage treatment plant, and clean water. But now he's in charge of the whole umbrella because of Heath's departure. So that changed some things around for us, some expectations. I was kind of hoping to actually have him help me with a bunch of stuff internally, you know, but I don't think that's going to happen right away. So. But he's a super guy. He couldn't be here today, but I'm sure he'll be at future meetings, so you get a chance to meet him. He has a lot of tenure. He actually worked for the city of Vancouver as an engineer, and he's actually responsible for that circular traffic loop in front of the city hall. So he was, and he actually had a big hand in the farmers market, getting all the utilities underground back when he was here. But he's been over in Pasco as a director. And then he was down in California for a while.
Yeah,
he came back up here. And so he says he's home now. So when he was actually over in Pasco, he and his kids would come up here just to go to the First Work Center because they really loved it. So now they're close by. And he got his dream job, so he's happy. So that's one thing. We talked previously
Mark,
about.
Did you have a question?
Well, only as long as we were talking about sewer water and stuff. It triggered something that came up in the meeting the other day, and I wasn't sure if it was a good idea or not, and I wanted to bring it up here for people that are more technically knowledgeable. Sounded like something that was very appealing to the builders was putting the sewer treatment underneath the parks. What was that called?
Well, you were talking about the stormwater.
The stormwater
collection, the tanks, and putting the tanks.
Put it underneath. Is that a good idea?
That's not a bad idea. I mean, if it's an underground system,
mm-hmm.
I think it makes sense. As long as the top of it is usable as park property, it makes sense. As long as it doesn't flood, has no recreational impact to us.
Kelly, what was your comment?
I said, do we hear fees?
Do we hear fees?
Everyone, we want some money for it.
They could help build the park, yeah.
Fees.
So aren't they doing that already, Bill?
They
did that on the corner of 20.
Several developers are using those tanks for stormwater collection as detention ponds or retention ponds.
Dave, you could probably speak to that one.
Yeah.
What? So when you have underground stormwater facilities,
yep.
Could we build a park over the top of them?
Yeah.
Yep.
We've done two or three of them now in Clark mm-hmm. County.
So what happens if they need to be serviced?
So they can.
He said it was cheaper than tearing up a street.
Yeah.
Was the example
used. Typically, the smartest way to do it, I guess, is you have your facilities that you don't want to disturb, and then you have some kind of grass area that's the play field, and you build it with a berm, so it's kind of like it's basically a 100-year storm storage facility.
Got it.
So your underground handles most of it. Your big events, it floods that area. You can flood your basketball court or whatever too if you want, but yeah.
But a lot of people put tanks underneath it.
Well, that does, and then it doesn't make sense.
You're talking about
just
flooded it.
I didn't know if there was some reason that we weren't already doing that. Why?
I've never seen that actually flood. But we've had pretty light rain since it's gone in.
You wouldn't want to put your
restaurant. We lost the connection.
I've been watching.
Hey, Kelly.
Just because I'm like.
We're at about, I got plenty of battery. I don't know why we fell off.
In that corner.
Okay,
you're
back
now.
Okay,
so
the other thing was the Anderson property.
Right.
The Anderson property, we've been waiting for the appraisal to come back.
and it's a 9-acre parcel out there at Fifth Lane Creek that I showed you on the tour, and the appraisal came back at $1.9 million. So just to give you context of where Linda was at, she, on her option agreement, she said, my target is 1.8 for the 9 acres. She said, anything above that, I will gift, basically. So it came in at 1.9. She was really, really worried that it would come in much lower than that, but it actually came in at 1.9. So in the option agreement, we've got until about is it March or May, or March, to finalize the deal with her. So our next step would be a purchase and sale agreement. The reason we delayed it is because of our improvements at Hawkinson Community Park. We're doing the disc golf course, and we want to make sure that we were able to afford that. And so with the PIF rates that are coming in right now, I think we can do both. So we're going to wipe out the rest of the acquisition fund. So once that goes down to zero, it's a dead account. That goes away. The combined fund will be impacted. And then so we should be able to afford both the acquisition and the development of the disc golf course with two bridges crossings. So looks like we're good to go. So
that's good news.
What is that, $200,000 an acre, roughly?
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah, 1.9.
Yeah.
Actually, it's July 23rd.
Is it July? Okay. I delayed it. Originally, it was supposed to be December
this year.
I wasn't sure if we had enough PIF monies to afford both. I want to make sure we had that assurance.
Yeah.
So.
So probably we can use that as an example to the new folks that here's an appraisal that came in, you know, and it says this, and
we got it for less.
One other thing is, so just I talked about this at Lackmas Park. There's a property.
Yeah.
We have a trail system.
Oh, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, we talked about that. So this property basically just cuts our trail right in half in one little corner. So it comes right to the far side of our trail. If they were to fence it, we'd cut our trail in half. So we worked with a real estate broker that represents the seller of the property, who is going to give us a piece of this land. We got to do a boundary line adjustment and actually buy just a small portion of land. So it's like a 60 by 30. So we're going to pay them to do a boundary line adjustment, and then it'll provide us a 30-foot backdrop off the trail. So if they ever do fence it, it won't be right on the trail. So it'll preserve that. I wish we were able to afford the entire property. We could have bought it, you know, for quite a bit of money, but it's in a general fund site, and it just didn't make any sense. So we're just going to pay for however much it's going to cost. It'll probably be like $3,000 or whatever out of our general fund budget. So, but that was a good save. I was really happy that the homeowner was willing to work with us, because he's selling the property right now.
Good thing you caught it before then.
Yeah.
Can we go back to that last one, though? So that 9-acre piece, 1.9, was the appraisal. And that's the corner, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
9 acres.
See, I don't see that, it on...
It includes the house and the big barn there.
Yeah, but
the structure's not...
No, I'm not talking about the structure. I'm just thinking from a developer standpoint, that would be pretty high with all that frontage improvement. Like, I don't, that's the one thing about the appraisals that I don't like, is it's kind of apples and oranges, because would someone really pay that appraised value if, you know, I guess we'd have to do those improvements.
We always try to negotiate with them, you know, to see how much they can donate, you know?
Right.
And so, in her case, she was right up front, says, hey, look, my target is 1.8.
Yeah.
You know? And she said that she probably wouldn't sell it to us for less than that,
But we have to do the improvements along the roadway, right?
Eventually.
So we got two sides. We got two roadways. So we have to do the improvements.
Yeah.
Corners are always spending.
And then there's probably a community park. So we probably have parking and all that. So
going back to the developer's conversation of, you know, we can get land cheaper than you can, or you're paying outrageous pricing. You know, if you put all the numbers together, it still doesn't match.
And I mean, if I was them, you know, that piece compared to a piece you don't have all that frontage, maybe it's not worth that, and you're not going to have the competition driving that price. You know, that's the. I mean, that seems expensive.
It is bloody expensive.
It is.
But on the other
hand. But if we wait 10 years, it'll be a lot more.
Well, yeah. And that's another factor.
It won't even be there.
Yeah.
You know, that's
somebody will pay for it.
Yeah. Somebody will pay for it, and. The thing that I'm always looking at is that we need to get ahead of the game to where we're buying it before it's so spendy.
Well, the one thing on that area out there, and of course with appraisal, they do comparables. To see what mm-hmm. driver of the price. Yeah. So we can see what's been sold out there recently in that area, like kind. And that'll probably be tell very telling.
Yeah.
That southeast corner is all being developed right now with homes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they probably paid a few bucks for that piece as well.
I wonder how much. Yeah. Let's go out to GIS and
peek. I haven't seen the appraisal yet, but we'll look at it.
Yeah, that'd be curious to see.
Yeah. So another thing regarding Lacrimus, the dam, should we take a look at that real quickly? This one I don't have much more. It's unfortunate. So I talked about that at our last meeting. So
it's in the manager's notes file.
Yeah, Georgia Pacific is, of course, you know, the mill's closing down in Camas, and they've reduced their population down. I think they're down to under 150 people working there right now, and I think it's going to keep going down.
Making paper towels, I think, is what they're doing.
And so Georgia Pacific is offloading the dam that controls the lake height for Lacrimus and Round Lake. And so they basically gave City of Camas an ultimatum: take this or we're going to open the floodgates and drain both lakes. And they're not kidding about that. And so Jerry Atchison, City of Camas, Parks Director, is kind of their liaison, if you will, to City of Camas with me, asking if we wouldn't mind sharing the responsibility. So for them to actually take over the dam, liability insurance is $248,000 a year to them. And that's just hugely, hugely expensive. And they said, man, we can't afford that. It's a big liability for something that, man, what are we gonna do about this? So they came to us, so I went to my respective county staff, I went to our risk management, asked them what it would cost us as a self-insured agency to insure that dam. And so there's, he said that even though we're self-insured, there'd be a rider on top of that would cost us an enormous amount of money. So it wouldn't be $248,000, but it's going to be somewhere probably in the high $100,000, probably like $160,000.
How about all the houses around the perimeter of the lake could contribute?
Supposedly, there's $11 million worth of damage that could occur if the dam broke. That's why the liability insurance is so high. We're basically going to have to go back and say, we can't help you. But depending on what City of Camas says.
So it would be a big loss if we lose that.
If Camas were to, even though it's still really expensive, it's far cheaper for the county to insure it. So is there any way for the city to pay the county to insure it? Or?
Maybe, I don't know. It's like $160,000, $180,000 for the county. Now, we as self-insured, our deductible is $1 million. And so given our current circumstances, our financial situation with General Fund, we're about minus $6 million in the hole right now. The answer is like, no. We're not obligated. The one thing is the possibility of turning over to private hands. You know, let them insure all those people that live around the lake and everything.
Yeah, go to the Lacrimus Homeowners Association. I don't know what it's called.
I don't know. But it's going to be an interesting. This thing just screams for public ownership, but I don't know if we can do it. I know we're not going
to
do it.
It would be amusing to let the Koch brothers go ahead and open those floodgates and see what it is and watch them deal with that.
Well, we have until September 27th. So every year. Every year, this time of year, they actually do.
Those homeowners will go absolutely berserk.
Oh, my God.
That's what's going on right now. I don't have an answer to that because I know that we're not in a position to help. So it's going to be a tough call. And so also, not just draining the lake, but they're also going to fence both sides of the dam, which cuts our trail in half. So this trail is not ADA accessible. However, there's a ton of people that use this to go from the
All the time. All
from the other part to the back, that's going to be blocked off in that thing. So they'll have to go around the far side trail system to get into the back side.
The city or the county can't form some type of a utility district to get that?
They're working on the Metropolitan Park District.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's included in there or not.
Some kind of storm water district or something, utility district of some sort.
Local improvement district.
Yeah, I mean, something that you could issue a bond on or something to at least get the insurance. I mean,
that's an interesting thought.
I think the city's going to get kind of creative.
They're going to have to, but I mean, yeah, I really...
We're just, yeah.
It's the classic thing where a big private entity leaves and just leaves behind a whole mess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I really, really, truly value our partnership with the City of Canvas. We're doing a lot of things together, like Lake Trail, for instance.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. It's just, it's difficult when we can't help them out. So I got my marching orders.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, you're
fortunate. The only other thing is, of course, remember that on September 29th is the big ribbon cutting ceremony for the Vancouver waterfront, which will be really cool. So yeah. That's going to be really neat. And I hope I'm going to be in town for that, but I'm not sure if I will be or not. I'd love
I'm
to
not going to be in town for it. I'm kind of bummed about it. But
you're going to be gone too?
Jeremy, could you bring that
should
up?
Be awesome.
You're I think that's all I've got. Condo down there, right? Pretty much.
I wouldn't mind having a condo.
Oh, I wouldn't either, but you have the price.
I haven't looked.
Anything
else? Big time.
Okay, good.
Yes, you got 7 figures.
Oh, really? Well, that'll... I wonder where the affordable housing conversation is and all of that. I think we missed that.
All right, so we need to do the... this is the waterfront grand opening. So we're coming up on 2:30 here, so I kind of want to... Anything else, Bill?
That's it. I'm talking about it.
You're done talking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. All right, so we'll go around the table and see if anybody's got any closing thoughts. Laura, how about you?
No closing thoughts.
No closing thoughts. John?
Thank you.
Couple. First, a big thank you to Bill. The Riverview Trust contacted Bill because they had a donor who was interested in making a donation to parks in Eastern County. And Bill connected them with me and the port, and we had a meeting. And the short version is the Danielson Foundation, represented by the Riverview Trust, is giving the Port of Canvas Washougal $20,000 to help with our nature play area. Which, if you remember, that was way over budget.
Sweet.
Yeah,
your
so
nature
that,
play.
That was,
who
that
was the nice. Designer of your nature play?
Greenworks.
And who insures your nature play?
I have no clue. Well, actually, yes, I do. It would be our
Biggs Insurance, maybe?
No. It's there's a state insurance pool that the ports use.
Okay.
I forget who it
Great.
Is.
Get on that.
All right.
Contact Kim Noah at the port. Anyway, so really, really cool. Frankly, we were going to make it happen come hell or high water next year anyway, but this makes it a lot easier. So very cool. Continuing discussions on a community center in Eastern County. The two cities finally got together and formed a joint committee and had a meeting last week. Which is again involving the port in that our property is still probably one of the two best locations. So that this will take a long time, but an interesting project. That's what I got.
All right. Chris?
The kids are back in school, so we're back to normal.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
All right. Kelly, do you have anything?
I just want to say I'm glad to see hope to see everybody at the 29th grand opening of the Waterfront Park.
Yeah,
we'll be there.
Okay. Miss Barbara?
Well, just a plug. Anybody who is unfortunate enough to not have a grade school student and needs a payback book, I do have them for sale. They're back down to $20 this year. And just going to Chuck's, you'll get your 20 bucks back. Just give me a shout. Kelly, Aiden says you can have a sample one, so we'll connect when you get back from Montana. And I've got you handouts from today's meetings. I'll give you them, too. That's all I got.
All right. I don't have anything.
I am.
Hey,
Jennifer. We're almost done with our playgrounds. So what an incredibly difficult process to put in a soft tile underneath existing surfaces that may or may not have been put in at the right height when they were originally built. So that has been really interesting and really a challenging process. So I think we have three schools finishing up, and one of those schools is getting a new playground itself. That subsurface was even really challenging, putting an asphalt underneath, because it has to be so precise with the tile.
Well, what school is getting a new playground?
Hauk.
Oh.
So, you know,
so
not all little bit concrete people apparently are the same. So, yeah. A lot of concrete issues. But we'll get it, and we'll install it, and it'll be awesome. So, and also we've been really focused on nature play and inclusive play with all of our new playgrounds. A main focus of ours is, our bond program, of course, is very student-centered. So putting in our playgrounds and putting in our landscape and putting in our environment, we've been looking for ways to deal with social emotional behaviors of students and in ways that are going to benefit them when they come back in the classroom. So every lens that we've looked at has had an introvert, an extrovert, kids who are needing more risk, less risk, nature, non-nature. So we've had a very intense discussion about what that is, and in our courtyards and in our learning environment, how to connect that back to curriculum. Geological rocks that are in our playground area, so kids can have an on-site field trip for that geology. Just some of those components, how wood decomposes in a natural environment. And so it's been, we've been really focusing on this, has been very important to us. And we're just now starting to hit some roadblocks around insurance, and people are like, wait, that might deteriorate in 5 or 6 years. And we're like, yes, it might. And that's a good learning experience for kids. And so we're gonna hit a little bit of roadblocks, but we're so far down the road. We're gonna do it, so we'll get them to adjust. So
we got new turf fields too.
We have four new football sides. They're not all used specifically for football. Some are soccer. Some are football. Fields that have been turfed. Propstra infield for baseball has been turfed or is being turfed, and some field lights, which was something that was, we were a little on the cusp about, especially whether communities would accept that or not with our fields. And so we've got lights going in at those high schools as well. This year we are starting track resurfacing at our middle schools and some of our high schools. Columbia River this next summer will have some upgrades to their stadium, and so a lot of fitness, sport, outdoor playground improvements well underway, which is super exciting.
That's awesome.
Really needed. Yeah. Yeah. That's our big update.
Yeah.
All right.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Good to see play areas.
It's nice to have money.
Yes.
Jeremy, you got anything?
Nothing at this time, thank you.
Nothing at this time. All right. Okay, well, with that, I believe we're adjourned. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Everybody.
Thanks for putting up with me.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you with us.
Oh, you guys, just so demanding.
Yeah, we